You're listening to the Hang 5 podcast, supported by Flat Society, Connection, Community, Culture, episode 42. Back to Europe and the mountains of Switzerland, we're heading to Zurich to speak with a big German writer who moved there a few years ago. Soft-spoken but killing it on his bike, he has been perfecting his skills for a long time. A common fixture of the Euro scene, he was also recently in Cali at One Love Jam. Here is the story of Dan Hennig. Dan Hennig, welcome to the Hang 5 podcast. Thank you very much for being with me. I know we've been trying to get together for a while. We met several times, but the last one we met was in One Love Jam a few weeks back. And now you're back in Zurich and finally we get together. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine. I was sick the last weeks, but now I feel better and still got this AA vibe with me.
Okay, all right. I'm glad you're feeling better. Yeah, that's it's always a bummer. So you were not able to ride during that time.
Yeah, 8 weeks I didn't ride because, I was injured when I came to LA. I had a crash when I rode my last session last year on the 31st December. Yeah, it was a stupid crash. I crashed my muscle on the leg. I hit the pack really hard, and I wasn't fit when I came to LA, but I made the best out of it, and yeah, sometimes you can also ride with a little bit of pain.
Yeah, it didn't look like it. You were pulling some cool tricks. So all right, but let's go back to the beginning, because so you're living in Zurich, which is in Switzerland, in the German speaking side of Switzerland, but that's not where you were born. My understanding is that you are originally from East Germany. Is that right?
Yeah, I was born in East Germany, a small town near Leipzig. Started riding flatland on a big parking place in the east side of Germany. It was fun.
Right. Was that before or after the reunification? So for the people who don't know, you know, after World War II, Germany was split into two, West Germany and East Germany, with both with their influences. But at some point in 1989, two Germanys reunited and became like full Germany again. You were born, can we talk about your age? Is that okay?
Oh yeah, I'm 41 now, and I'm born in 82. Yeah, behind the wall, on the East German side of Germany. Nothing was allowed there. Some stuff from the West side, like foods and music and all the West side stuff, wasn't allowed in East Germany. But I was a kid, and for me, it was okay. The wall was falling down in 89, and I started riding BMX flatland 1999, but my first BMX I had 1992. It was a sheep race BMX, and yeah, I rode small hills with my friends and had some fun on a BMX bike, because also of the movie E.T. When I saw the movie, I was so impressed, and yeah, BMX riding, I liked that. I was hyped. Yeah, but I didn't know that you can do with a BMX bike, you can do tricks on a flat ground. At this time, I didn't know that.
Right, you're pretty young. I mean, if you said you got your first bike in 92, you were 10 years old, and you're still in Germany. Was it popular back then? Was a lot of BMX riders?
Yeah, it was. After the movie, there was a short hype for like 2-3 months. It felt like that because a lot of kids in my town had a BMX bike, especially the rich kids. We had a lot of them. Yeah, I know some of them, and they had some good bikes, but they started like, okay, it's cool, I need that bike, for me, it's no problem to get it. And then we wrote like a few times and then they stopped because they had some other interest.
Was it easy to find bikes then at the time?
Oh, no. It was not that easy. There was no option to order a good bike or something else. You have to go to a big and really, really good bike shop or a special BMX store, and there you can find the bikes.
Is that what you did to get your first bike?
My grandma gave that bike to me as a present when I was a kid. It was like not the best, a cheap one, and then the frame broke after like 1 year, and start to change some parts. And yeah, then came the day when I had a hard crash, and I came back home with a face full of blood, and I had short pants and a short and open legs and open arms, everything was full of blood. And yeah, my grandma was so shocked. I was shocked too. And yeah, then I started playing football for a bit. Yeah. In 1999, when I came back home from school with 16, I watched the East games. And I saw Flatland BMX, and I was so hyped up from the sport, because I didn't know that you can do flat tricks with a BMX bike, and that was my beginning. And then I started to try to buy a bike, because it wasn't easy when you are young and you don't have the money for a really good BMX bike, because at this time a good bike from like Haro was like 800 Deutsche Mark.
Yeah.
It's like 400 euros, 450.
That was a lot of money back then, yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So you said you saw the Flatland, or you saw BMX and Flatland on TV at the X Games. Were there some guys that, you know, you looked up to, some heroes, some guys that were in there?
Yeah, I saw many riders like Nathan Penoncek, Ricky Gomez, Marty Korper, Phil Dolan, Steingräber, all these legend riders. And I was so impressed because everybody had a different style, and I like the way how it goes, how they move with the bikes. And yeah, I was so impressed when I saw that. On the next day, they played again, but in the night, and I stand up in the middle of the night to record this, and I watched it again as a motivating thing.
Okay, so you know, you were around 17, 18 at the time, so you, I guess you were finishing high school. After you saw that on TV, were you riding a lot then, every day?
I buy a used bike, BMX bike from a friend of mine, and I try to repair this bike, and then I started with two other guys, and we meet like every day at the parking lot and try to learn all the tricks I have seen at each game. But it was a hard time at this moment. I wasn't into it. I was a beginner, and at this time it was really hard to find the right way to start BMX Flatland.
Yeah, there was
the first thing I've learned was a pack wheelie.
Mm-hmm.
We tried pack wheelie on the parking lot, and you have all these lines on for the cars when they park there. In the first week, I made like one or two lines, and then I made some more and more, and like 2-3 months I can do like 50 lines. Then was time for something new. Yeah, I tried like a fire hydrant. It's like a half boomerang. And then the next step is the Max Stalker, and this thing was so hard to learn. And then from time to time, when you're more into the sport, you realize, there are some VHS videos, some beginner stuff, or some BMX books. And I also had a BMX book at this time, and I learned the Mega Spin. And the decade out of the book, I also, maybe you remember this time, we had this, all this music television channels, like MTV, and saw a really, really, really cool soundtrack of like BMX riders cruising around Paris, like Flatlanders, park riders, street riders, dirt riders, and all with these chrome bikes. In these videos, I saw some parts from Flatland riders. They're doing like mega spins and the decades or hitchhikers and stuff. And my favorite trick was the mega spin. And I want to learn this trick. And I spent like 3.5 months by myself to check out this trick. That was so hard. But I had the little first key, like this peg wheelie, straight peg wheelie. And I also had the book and also saw the video a lot of times. And yeah. I will never forget this moment when I spun the first time on a BMX bike. And at this time, I was riding for like 6 or 7 months. And it was so hard to learn that alone.
I know, that's the hard part. You keep saying like you were by yourself or with your friends, but nobody that was better than you was, you know, showing you the ropes or showing you how to make it easier. Oh, you got to lean this way or you got to do that way. I mean, using books is not easy on still pictures. Video is a little bit easier because you kind of see the movement, but still it's far away, it's foreign. And then you were starting from really the beginning. So good for you. I want to talk about, since you said, you know, you got a first BMX in 1990, and then you got hurt and you stopped, and then you got back in 99. I recently watched a video that was made by Freedom BMX out of Germany. They made a video interview of you, I think a couple of years back. In that video, you kind of ride a little bit of street and a little bit of park along with Flatland. And, you know, typically when people start BMX, they ride a little bit of everything, right? And then they choose a discipline that they prefer. But for you, it was always Flatland? Or did you ride other things as well?
To be honest, for me, it was always Flatland. I like to watch park and street, and I wish I can do it. But I know how dangerous it is. Mm-hmm. And I had a crash when I was a kid. Yeah, it's better for me to ride Flatland. That was my choice. But I love all these things of BMX.
Okay. Looking at your riding today, it's still a little bit street influence, right? You do 360 hop and 180s and jumping off the bike and, you know, like foot jam decade, things that are sort of somewhat street influenced, right?
Yeah, that's true. I like this flat freestyle, and Matthias opened this door, and there are still so many tricks to do, and it's fun. I like that way of riding, but I also like this technical way of riding. Mm-hmm. But it's still hard for me because I rode like 20 years with the front brake, and then 5 years ago, I took off the front brake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Actually, looking at that video of you, and I've seen you riding many times, like I want to try to do the decade the way you do it, because I don't do it the same way. Anyway, so yeah, that was going to be another question that I had is, you know, when did you remove your brake? Because obviously today you're riding brakeless, and so you said 5 years. And you also mentioned that you rode front wheel for a long time. Somebody's calling you.
Sorry for this.
That's all right. That's all right. So
that was Mr. Dustin Alt.
Ah, that's Dustin Alt. A shout out to Dustin. He wants to tell you about Japan, probably. He just came back.
Yeah.
Just going back to your style of riding and brakes, no brakes. So when you restarted in 99 and you got this bike, was it just front brake or it was two brakes?
At the beginning, I had two brakes like for 3-4 years. Mm-hmm. And then I took off the back brake and I only used the front brake of the most of the tricks I was doing.
Right. So you were learning speeds and decades. So I'm guessing you learned those with brakes?
Yeah, I learned the decade with the brake and not with the foot on the tire. Back in the days, we put the foot on the a bit on the frame and on the seatboard.
That's right. That's how I learned them as well. Is the kind of bike you ride very important to you?
Oh, yes.
You recently switched to a titanium frame, but I mean, you're a pretty tall guy, right? How tall are you?
1.87 meters.
Oh, that's like me. I'm 88, 188. So yeah, we're tall guys. It's, flatland is a bit harder when you're tall. Although when you look at Matthias, he's very, and some other guys as well. But some of the current really good riders, like for example, in Japan, they're a bit shorter, right?
Yeah, that's cool.
You have a custom frame right now? What size is your frame?
My frame is 20.7.
Oh, the top two. That's quite long. Okay.
Yes. In all the years with a longer frame, you never have problems with the back. When you do something for muscles on your front and back muscles, that's also important. Mm-hmm. But a long frame helps a lot because the first 10 years of BMX Flatland, I don't want to say I had hard problems with the back, but sometimes I failed my back. And yeah, with all the short bikes and stuff, yeah, I think that's the point.
I agree. I mean, I don't have a frame as long as yours, but it's over 20. It's important. It is a small bike. And we're tall guys. So you're learning tricks, you're finding your style, you're getting better. When did you start, going to events, trying to go to contests or traveling for BMX? When did that start?
And now here's a word from our sponsor.
Let Society is a proud sponsor of the Hang 5 podcast. This month, we're offering all listeners 10% off all products site-wide. Just enter promo code SPRING24 at checkout. Flat Society, connection, community, culture.
Yeah, that's a good question. My first jam, I didn't know that I go to a jam. I only want to visit in the neighbor town, the BMX store, on a Friday evening. And I came there, and a DJ was in front of the door, and like 15 Flatland riders like with 69 spokes in the wheels. was crazy to watch. And yeah, they played some hip-hop sound, and some guy was doing the barbecue. And the other guys had some fun on the bike, and I was so impressed. And at this time, I was riding for like 10 months. That was my first jam, and I was so hyped. And yeah, a little bit later, like after 1.5-2 years, I went to the German championships. At this time, it was in Hamburg, Germany.
Yeah.
And I didn't rode there, I only watched, but yeah, that was good. But I wasn't ready to ride a contest at this time after 2 years. And my first competition I rode after 3.5 years. Yeah. And I rode Masterclass. My first competition, I made the first place because I had some good tricks like Megas in the gate. I also did some pedal steamrollers, like a half round. Yeah, it was funny. At this time, no master rider did this trick.
You were riding masterclass, which is a pretty high class. You know, that's above expert, right?
Yeah, that's true.
And then this was your first category you entered.
Yeah. Okay.
That's pretty good. How was the scene in Germany at the time? I know everybody knows about the big guys, you know, Michael Stengraber and the others, but were there a lot of riders in Germany at the time?
At this time when I started, yeah, we had a lot of German flatland riders.
Cool.
Yeah, Stuttgart had a big scene.
Yeah.
Berlin had a big scene. Hamburg had a big scene. A lot of small riders curled up. At this time, it was good to see.
Did you ever go to the Cologne contest?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I also went to the Cologne competition. Back in the days, there was no fancy stuff like a scooter. I love the scooter thing with the flatland stage inside and stuff. But back in the days, they made the flatland competitions on the big asphalt area. Maybe you remember this place.
I do remember. That's where they had the park competition after. But yeah, I remember when the flat was there.
Yeah. And back in the days, we had like super cool competitions, flatland competitions like Carhartt Flatland Contest. I remember this. And other competitions, we had like sponsors like Adidas. And yeah. Was amazing. Was a huge thing at this time. So many riders. You came to the competition and you had like 45 masterclass riders.
That's good. How was progression for you around that time? I mean, you're starting to see other people and going to events. Were you riding a lot and progressing a lot?
Oh yeah, I rode a lot. I found flatland for myself, and it feels like the right sport for me, because I was free. When I was super motivated, I went to ride, and when I wasn't motivated, I stayed home. But at this time, I watched some VHS movies, and yeah, sometimes like for 6-7 hours, because my dream was to become a BMX pro rider, BMX flatland pro rider. My goal wasn't never to be the best, but it's cool to have a name in the scene, to have our own style, to try to go your own way in BMX. That's super cool. That's also what I still like on BMX flatland. It's like freedom.
Mm-hmm.
You can do what you want to do.
Okay. By that time, you're almost in your 20s, right? So are you working on the side, or are you going to school, or are you just riding? What's happening there?
Yeah, besides riding, I live like the normal worker life. I had a normal job and worked like 8 hours from Monday to Friday. Yeah, and I did that until 32, and then I only worked half time, and the rest of the time I made with shows. I also had like three and a half years I didn't work, and I only wrote shows. But it's very stressful, also for the body and for the mind. It's nice to make some money with BMX, that thing you've been loving the most. But it's also hard, because there's also another side. And I saw the other side a lot, and after 3.5 years, I said, come on then, it's also good to have something beside BMX. Because from one day to the other day, it can be over. It's hard to find a job when you never worked in your life. You're only focused on BMX riding, right?
if you leave of BMX, it becomes your job, and therefore you have to ride even when you don't want to sometimes, right? You have to do a show, you have to go to competition when you don't necessarily want to. So that's, I totally understand what you say about, you can see the negative side of it too. Like, it needs to remain fun. It needs to be, you know, still a passion. Once it becomes something that you're dependent on for money and for living, it's
true.
Very stressful.
Yes, and when you ride some shows you don't want to ride, and you feel a little bit, that was my feeling sometimes, you feel like a clown. It's okay. I always make the best out of it, and I always think positive, but a lot of riders know that sometimes it's hard. And when you need the money, you have to ride the show. You can't say, yeah, I don't want to ride, because you need the money. You want something to eat, you want to live, right? And with a half-time job, it's good. When Corona came, I still had money to live a good life. It's hard when you only have the show riding stuff. It's a hard business.
It's never guaranteed. You have to go and find the shows all the time, right?
Yeah. You have to work for it. You have to check out new clients. You have to check all these old clients from all this year, send some nice messages, give some calls and stuff. You have to keep your website updated. And yeah, it isn't easy. It's hard. Some kids ask me sometimes, hey, that's super cool, you're writing. But they don't see all this work behind. But mm-hmm. That's normal. You also have this in other sports, right?
That's right. Now you found sort of the right balance where you work sort of a regular job part-time, and then you are a part-time rider, a part-time, you know, a pro rider. Is that how
you describe it? Yeah. At the moment, I have a half-time job. Mm-hmm. I start at 7:30 a.m. and finished 11:30 a.m. So then I work there for like 4 hours, and then I have enough time to check all my stuff, my mails, and to find some new clients for BMX shows, and to go jogging in the woods, or BMX riding outside, or in my BMX room. Everything is close here around my place. It's super easy. I go to work with my race bike for like 15. It took me 15 minutes to go to work. It's a good warm-up in the morning. And yeah, I'll be doing sports for 6 days in a week. Only on Sunday, I take a break. Sometimes also on Tuesday or Thursday. Depends on the week.
Right. And so is that enough for you to live on? Like, are you able to live, you know, with working part time and then doing shows on the side?
Oh, yeah, it's good. I'm not rich. A lot of people think that sometimes, also of my old friendship hood from East Germany, because, we know. All these jokes about Switzerland money and stuff, but no, it isn't. But I'm living a really good life, a much better life as in Germany for sure, because the quality of life in Switzerland is really, really good, and you also get paid when you have a good job. Mm-hmm. And yeah, luckily I have a good paid job. That's also a reason why I can work only 4 hours a day, and can make the rest of the money with my BMX shows, and also doing some workshops for kids sometimes. not that often anymore,
because it's hard
to get kids into Flatland.
Yeah,
but I still try my best to motivate the kids, and I also do some shows sometimes with some workshops after. But yeah, I would say I'm still living my dream, and I found the balance.
Yeah,
that's exactly the right word, the balance, like on the bike. I'm happy to find that, because it took me a lot of years to get there where I am now. But yeah, that's life, part of the process, and everything was fun and super cool, and in life you learn all the time, right?
So I have a few questions from all the things you just said. We talked about what you do for a living, and you have a part-time job, and you do shows, and who are your sponsors? I know you have some sponsors, so who are the guys that are supporting your riding?
Flat Society, I'm super proud of this. In January, at One Love Gen in Newport Beach, I meet Sean from Flat Society. He is doing all this marketing stuff, and there's also Nick.
He's doing a great job
in the shop. Yeah, I'm super happy to have this sponsor, because they make everything possible, and super cool. And yeah, that's one of my dreams when I was a kid. America, and one day I want to be a pro rider, and I want to have a bike sponsor from America. And yeah, today I have this super funny, and yeah, I'm happy about that. Thanks a lot. I also have Focus Water. It's a Swiss vitamin water, and yeah, they have some different tastes, and they support me with drinks and also with some money. And now it's the third or fourth year of my sponsorship with Focus Water. On last Friday, I fixed all the support for 2024. And yeah, I'm super happy about this, to have this guy on board. And then I have the support from a really, really good friend of mine, the organizer from the Never Off Battle. He's also supporting me a lot, and I'm very thankful for the support and also for the friendship. And
is he giving you a car?
It's not normal to have a friend who's working really hard for his business, and still have the love in the heart for BMX Flatland, and supporting friends. That's super cool. I'm super happy about that, and so thankful.
I think you're a pretty healthy guy. Like, you talk about, you know, vitamin water that supports you, and then you taking care. You talk about taking care of your body. Is that important to you? I'm assuming it is. You know, do you, when you train, do you think of your health, and you know what you eat, and how you prepare your body and things like that? Are you doing other sports?
Oh yes. Back in the days, it was not like that. Because yeah, I was young, and in the beginning of BMX Flatland, I didn't took care of my body. That was what was one of these jobs of my grandma. She always told me, yeah, when you want to be a sportsman, you have to eat healthy. And I had to learn this in all this year. I still love some burgers and like pizza and stuff. But yes, when you want to ride Flatland on a high level, you have to eat clean, like Terry says. I can't do that all the time, but I try my best, and I live much healthy as years before, that's for sure. I eat a lot of vegetables and some fruit and beans and stuff. For sure, an important thing, definitely.
That's great. The other thing I wanted to talk about when, you know, being a show writer is you get to do shows in a lot of different places and a lot of different surfaces. So are you able, how hard is it for you to adjust, to adapt to a different type of ground? You know, everybody can write their best at their own spot, but if you got to, you know, write a different surface, whether it's wood or concrete or sometimes tiles, and you know, it's difficult to adjust. How is it for you when that happens?
It's that show thing. That's also one of these hard points. Sometimes you have these people like, hey man, you write this show in other theater. Yeah, we know, you know, like, you need 5 to 5 meters and it has to be clean. And then you came there and you have some silicone spray on it from some breakdancers and stuff. It isn't easy. That's also a point you have to learn in all these years. Sometimes I use some tricks. I always bring some coke with me. And I have this spray thing you use for the flowers at home to make them red. Mm-hmm. You put a little bit water and a little bit coke inside, and you can spray a bit on the ground when it's possible. And sometimes it isn't. Then you can go up with your pressure and to have more grip on the ground. Yeah. There are a lot of tricks. I think all these show writers who listen to it, they know what I mean for sure. But yeah, it's still a hard thing. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. You can play with the tricks. That's just the super easy thing on the show. Nobody is seeing that you're doing 5 rounds mega spins or 10 rounds. You know what I mean?
I do.
You get your money. But I still love this the challenge, because it's also my company, my business, and I want to impress the people. Not with like cheap tricks. I want to do real tricks. I want to go home. I'm super happy. I didn't land my hard contest stuff, but I pulled some really nice original tricks. The crowd was super happy. The client is super happy. I'm happy. That's the best way.
Okay.
And I try to handle it like that all the time.
Good. Okay, a couple of more things. I'm taking notes as we speak. It's my new thing. So I don't forget, you know, when you talk about something. I want to talk about two things, but the first one I want to talk about again from what we just said is that we talk about different surfaces for riding. And of course, I'm following you on social media, and I know that you have an indoor spot. Obviously, living in Zurich, it's in the northern hemisphere, and then it gets cold in the winter. And I guess it gets snowy or rainy. And so it's important to have a riding spot where you can go all the time. Is that something you're renting, or is that your place that you own, or how did that come about?
I rent this place now since 6 years, and it was super, super hard to get this one, because, Zurich, it's also a huge city. In all these huge cities, everybody wants to have a room,
to rent
the room for like fitness stuff, for other hobbies, and everybody wants a room, and it's hard to get one. It's hard to get one you can pay. Yeah, you have to watch out in the web, and I watched out for like, I started 6 years ago. I started in the summertime, August, July, August, and then Yeah, we had like December, I had like 40 meetings or something, over 30 for sure. And sometimes we all know this.
We have these super cool pictures in the web.
And sometimes you have the super funny guys, they load up like two pictures and you can't see the room and you have to watch. You have to talk to these guys, and I try to be smart all the time. I bring my bike with me to every meeting, and some rooms, they have bad floors inside. Some rooms are too dirty, too dark, too expensive, too small. When I had a room I'd like, then this owner was a little bit complicated, like, oh man, what you want to do in this room? And I showed him like a snake spin, and he was like, man, you can't do that here inside, it's too dangerous. I told him, sir, I want to rent this room. This room is free for a half year. You want to make money or not? Oh no, no, I've been looking for other guy, that's too dangerous for me. And yeah, and then in December, on one of the last meetings I had, it's luck, I meet this old guy. He's also a bike rider, he's a mountain bike rider, and he's like 67. And he's super smart and super cool and friendly. And he showed me the place. And then I showed him my riding, and he was super happy. And he said, yeah, finally I found a guy, a normal, smart sport guy who want to rent this room, not as a party room, not as a fun room or something else. He's doing something good. And like 1 week later, I had the key for the room and I ordered some wood. And yeah, at Christmas, I wrote the first time in this room, I never forget this moment. Was super, super funny. It's on the videos, it's looks bigger than it is. A lot of guys told me that, but all these Flatlanders knows what's up with the videos and the spots.
So what's the size of the room?
The room is like 850 to 7.
That's almost like Mars Circle, but of course I don't have walls, so it's easier.
Yeah, it's super cool. It's 5 minutes away, 5 minutes walk from my apartment.
I guess the guy the guys who didn't want to rent to you, it's probably because they're worried about insurance. But what happened if you get hurt in there, or you know, if you damage,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's true.
But it's true. It's very important. I mean, you look at these days, everybody, almost every of the top riders have riding spots. You know, Matthias has one, Sidse has one. You know, like well, everybody. I mean, you know, in the US maybe a little less, and still. Terry has his own place, obviously, you know, he has his garage and an outdoor one, and even the Japanese have some, Kyo has a place, and he rides in a shop, and etc., etc. It's important for progression, and it's if you compare it, it's now such an elite sport, it's serious, and so, and you look at other sports, all the top sports people from other sports, they also need their own, you know, space for their activity. You can't expect like a tennis man to go practice tennis on, you know, some other thing, or a people who play basketball go on something else. It doesn't work. People need their spot.
That's true. Super important, for sure. And I'm so thankful to have a spot like that. Sometimes I'm a bit fucked up because I feel like a lion in a cage.
Mm.
But I think, come on, man, you learned a lot of tricks inside this room. It's warm in the winter time. You have a super cool sound system inside. The straight floor, it's not slippery. You also have a small repair place inside. So I have a coffee machine there.
I built everything
I need. I'm still super happy. But every year it's the same moment, like, oh, I wait until the end of March when I can go out to write all this other nice thoughts I have here in Zurich around the corner.
Okay, so you keep the place year long, but you don't ride there year long. In the, you know, once the weather is better, you ride outside.
Oh yeah, when the weather is better, I ride outside for sure. Cause I start riding in this room in the end of October until the end of March. So that means, yeah, like five months. Sorry.
All right. And then the other thing I wanted to ask you, so from what we said before, is going back to contests. Are you doing a lot of contests these days?
Oh, yeah. Last year, I wrote a lot of contests and learned also a lot of riding competitions, because I had a completely blackout last year in Montpellier at Fiese. Mm-hmm. And there was a moment for me when I said, come on, Dan, you have to change something with your training, with your mindset and all this stuff. And I'm super happy I changed something and it worked out good. And I also plan to ride competitions this year so much I can. I also had the plan to go to Enoshima, but I was sick. And I didn't have breakfast, and that's the reason why I canceled my flight and I didn't go to it.
It was raining a lot, so which is another topic all in itself that we might discuss later. But so I'm glad to see that you're doing some competition. That's great. Are you getting nervous in competition, or is it you feeling okay?
Before last year, Fiese, I had a blackout. I was nervous all the time. Mm-hmm. And now I can handle it much better. To be nervous a little bit is normal, to have that feeling. But when I start my first trick, I'm in the zone, completely in my own world. I'm not nervous anymore.
That's good. I can understand that. I'm a little bit the same. I mean, I was also nervous. It feels better now. And I know some riders, and I'm not sure he still does it, but some riders were helped by Marty Cuopa. Have you ever considered doing something like that, whether with Marty or somebody else, like, so, you know, getting help for, you know, the mental aspect or the preparation aspect, or are you always on your own?
I've been talking a lot with some friends, and I've been thinking in that way you can learn something from everybody. I've been listening to everything. Lee Musselwhite helps me. He had the idea because I told him I had some problems sometimes riding competition. And he had the idea to make some battles. We used WhatsApp for this. But yeah, I plan to do that with him again. And also I did that with Dustin. And with Dustin, I'll be talking a lot about this contest riding and all the stuff. But yeah, contest riding is a lot of work. Yeah, you need a lot of discipline for that. And when I was young, I never practiced one contest run in my life. I had my front wheel brake. I had a lot of tricks. And I did that trick that I felt in that moment.
What came into my mind, and without the brake and less tricks,
it's also a challenge for me. But I found my way.
Good to hear. Do you feel pressure from other riders? Like if you are at the contest and some of the riders are going before you and you see their trick, are you changing your run? Or you set on your run and it's really you against yourself?
Yeah, super cool question. In practice, I don't have pressure. But depends on also on the group. When you have like five other smart riders in the group, everybody is waiting for the other rider and nobody is riding all the time and riding into some other riders, then I don't have pressure.
But when you have a stressful group, the pressure can grow for sure. When I have stuff like that, I stop riding and go to other quiet place. I focus on my 3 minutes.
You can do what you want to do in this practice time.
It only depends on these 3 minutes. Don't stress out yourself for nothing. Don't stress your mind, especially before competition riding. That's the worst, because practice says nothing. You have the 3 minutes. I always looking forward to these 3 minutes. I remember Glasgow last year, the World Championships. For me, riding there was a bit stressful because the floor was yellow. I rode never before in my life a yellow floor. But anyway, the floor wasn't bad. The group wasn't bad. But for me, it was hard to find my way to come into my riding, to feel the flow, to come into it. And I rode for like 1 hour practice, and it took me 1 hour to pull one or two bike flip combos. And I was like, man, come on. Tomorrow is qualification. You have to ride. The other man in the other ear told me, stop thinking bullshit. You have to focus on the qualification tomorrow. You trained a lot at home. You can do this stuff. Believe in yourself.
Yeah, the next day you had it like 5 minutes practice before the first ride of the group starts.
For me, it's important to warm up in this 5 minutes, to warm up my body
and to feel my bike in a good way. Yes, was super cool. I surprised myself in my run because, yeah, I land what I want to land. I had like 3 steps on the ground. That wasn't a flawless run, but it was a good run with good own original tricks, and I was super happy. And I was qualified on place 14, and yeah, I was stoked. All the work paid off, and also that mindset thing. What I mean, when you come to the competition, you have a bad practice time, you don't land anything you want. So important. Stay positive, believe in yourself. I knew it all these years, but when you feel the process, you also have this man in the head on the other side who's telling you sometimes, it can be hard. Can you do it? Yes, you can. You have to believe in yourself, stay positive, and everything will be good at the end. And when not, it's also okay. You tried it, and that's the most important thing.
The other riders, you know, there's a good atmosphere with riders, like people support each other. Is that your feeling?
Oh, yes. That's for sure.
It is a competition after all, and people need, you know, people want to do good and they want to be on top, and but still everybody's friend.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like, I don't know, it's hard to say.
I guess it depends on the people.
Yeah, we all are still friends, but sometimes you also have this elbow system in the competition and stuff. It's a completely other book, a friendship, and then this sports games. Because when this competition starts, in this moment, in this 3 minutes, you are your own friend. I'm super happy for others when they land some super cool stuff, when they had a good run. I always try to be smart. Nobody's perfect, and I know we all have some different characters, and I also know some people have some problems with others, but I think it's the scene, the completely scene. It's a good family. I like that vibe and stuff. And everybody have a problem. Everybody try to help. And for sure, super cool. Back in the days, the family felt much warmer and bigger for sure.
Mm.
I don't know what happened, but maybe you can understand me a little bit. Maybe because we had more riders and a bigger scene. I don't know.
That's certainly part of it. It's good. It's a good transition to my next point, my next set of questions. I wanted to talk about how you see the flatland scene these days and how you see in what direction it's going. It's, you know, do you think it's going to keep going? It's going to die? It's going to stay the same? Or, you know, what's the future has in store? It's big, a lot of questions in one, I guess.
For sure, we all know that the best scene in the flatland world we have in Japan. And I think Japan is this huge, huge engine because they have so many riders. They have this huge scene here in Europe. It changed a bit, for sure. When I was a kid, I told you before in one of your first questions, we had a really big scene in Germany. That thing is over. The Frenchies, they still have a good scene, but I think also back in the days they had a bigger scene, but they still have a good one. And yeah, Austria have a good scene, but not that much competition riders. But you don't need these competition riders. It's better to have a good scene, really good competition riders. That's the way I think. One of that point why I love BMX so much. It's cool sometimes to ride alone BMX, to focus on your riding and your tricks. But the best time you have with your friends on the bike, when you share your time, when you have a super cool day, like one love jam. I was so impressed. It was so crazy for me, and also a dream and a point on my bucket list to go to this one love jam, to feel that vibe, to see what's going on there. And I never forget that moment when I parked the car in front of the beach. I saw the super huge asphalt place with all these riders. You have this mid-school riders, this new school riders, this old school riders. They only meet there for riding her bikes, to having fun together. And I was so impressed.
It's quite unique because it is in January. It is a place where it's, you know, normally always good weather. The spot is huge. It's been going on for many years. I think in the last podcast we talked about it. It's like 14 or plus years or something.
It's crazy. So
it's a combination of a lot of factors. It's the historical birthplace of flatland BMX and BMX, you know, in California. So all these factors make it that people want to go there, travel there. So, I mean, going back to what you were saying about the scene changing and being a bit smaller in some countries like Germany and France, for instance, I totally get your point that, you know, sometimes it's good to ride by yourself and sometimes it's also super good to share a good time with friends. I want to go a little bit further and say that to me, I think what's important for a scene is to have a number of jams. It's, you know, the ability for people to get together, because that's also how the scene sustains itself, but also grows. You have two or three events around the year in the same area, whether it's a country or a region. I think it's important. And you see that, you know, in places where there is some events, like people are growing. And I'll take the example of France, where they don't only have the official big competition like FIS, but they also have a number of jams in different region, and that keeps the scene alive. And maybe there's less jams than before in Germany, and that's that maybe why it is there are less guys going. I mean, I know, you know, the usual is Fight the Winter, shout out to Malte, and then there's, you know, the other competitions, but maybe that's that. I know in the UK they're having a hard time doing that as well, you know, because the UK was also one of the first scenes in the world after the US, you know, it's because they also speak English, like that was an area of growth when BMX started in the UK, where it was at the forefront of European BMX and flatland back in the day. But to me, it's very important to have a lot of jams, I think, more than competition. I mean, anything where you get people, because not a lot of people are ready to do competitions, but they are more ready to, you know, join for a weekend in a place with their friends and meet other people that they don't meet very often. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, for sure. I like the balance. When I started, I told you, my first thing was a flatland jam. And I didn't know when I was on the way to this first BMX store that is a jam. And yeah, and the next one was a competition. I grew up with competitions and jams all the time. And back in the days, we had, like 6 or 7 flatland competitions in Germany, and like also 6 or 8 flatland jams. And sometimes I miss that, but it's super cool to go to jams, to don't have this pressure thing, cause yeah, when you're good, when you're a really good rider and you go to competition riding is work and always stressful. You want to smile, you want to have fun, but for your head and for your body, it's stress for sure. And a jam, you go to a jam, you don't have pressure, you don't have to pull your hardest tricks. It's only the challenge with yourself. But yeah, jams are really, really important. And BMX, one of the most important things on BMX, to have a good time with friends on the bike.
That's true. Another part of the question I did ask was, what do you think the state of flatland is? On social media, everybody's talking about the new Japanese, the new scene of Japan, although Japan has been going for forever. And then maybe, you know, you look at Enoshima, stop one of the World Cup, you look at the top 12 riders, and there's 3 Europeans, 1 Canadian, and everybody else is Japanese. Of course, it's not super accurate because it happened in Japan. There's obviously more Japanese rider entering. Not everybody can, you know, have the resources to fly to an event around the world. It seems, looking at it, and of course, it was qualification and the finals were rained out, and therefore the results of qualification are the final results, and maybe people were holding up a bit. It was a bit surprising to see Matthias in 12th place and Alex in top 16 and some of those guys. What do you think is happening with flatland?
Like I said before, there is a super cool new engine running, and he's running really, really fast. And this engine is from Japan, and I see it as a motivation. Because back in the days, we had all these crazy riders from America. Now we have all these crazy young scene hardcore riders from Japan. And the big difference between, I think it's hard to say it like that, but that's the way what I've seen with my students. Did you see most of the students in Europe? They don't have this discipline level that the Japanese kids have. That's unbelievable. We all know it's super cool to have talent for balance, but you still need practice in flatland, and flatland needs a lot of practice. For me, to watch out to Japan, it's a huge motivation. It's a fresh wind in the scene. I like that. Super new tricks, super new styles. It makes me proud when I see stuff like that. how the sport grows the last years. And I'm super happy and thankful to be a part of the huge Flatland scene. And Flatland grew up a lot. And also with the riders and the tricks. The future of Flatland is still bright, for sure. Sometimes I've been dreaming, then one day you are old, and then maybe you have some Japanese kids, they throwing 720 or double bike flips and stuff, or double tail whips. I don't know what's possible with all these titanium stuff, and also the way to live this Flatland life. When you start with 6, you're super sporty, you're super talented in balance. Like, you is a guy like that. Mm. And sometimes I think, like, when I watch him, he is so perfect in his tricks, in his riding. Sometimes for me, it looks like KI, you can't see a mistake. And it's so cool to see him riding, to see Cleo riding, and yeah, like Yuchi and all these other super Japanese kids. Sometimes I sit at home and before riding, it's a bit boring, and I try to watch out for motivation. I go to YouTube. Back in the day, I watch VHS videos. Now sometimes I have looked competitions of Japanese kids. Last week I watched a video. I saw kids from 6 up to 9 years. With 9 years or 8 years, you're doing one original trick in your competition run. That's unbelievable. What's possible on Flatland with this discipline and stuff?
I can't wait.
It will be funny when I'm getting old, for sure.
I agree with you that there's still a lot of things to be discovered, and new tricks and new positions and new moves, etc., and styles. But there's still the challenge of getting younger people into the sports. I mean, you look at yourself, you're 42. Like, a lot of riders are pushing 40, the top riders, except the Japanese. The sports can still evolve, but will we have enough people? Will we have enough young people, you know, to continue, especially in North America or Europe? It looks like in Asia, there's a lot of younger guys, but the rest, you know, the top riders in the rest of the world are a bit older, right? So what do you think about that?
That's a really, really big point. In Germany, we don't have this much talent. France also, but France, they have Julien. This other guy, Leboff.
I think Gervin's a little bit older as well, but yeah. And
he's older, yeah. He looks really young. But this Julien is a gun for sure. But back in the days, we had like 3 or 4 of these guns. And now we have like one from France. We have one good young guy from Germany, this Tim Hofel. When I look to Austin, don't see somebody. And yeah, you're right. In Europe, we need young riders for sure. Alex is doing a great job with his school in France. We all know that. I talked with Kevin Nikulski and Dustin Alt about this. Back in the days, we saw Flatland and we fall in love. And we said, okay, that's it. And the young people, I don't know. I don't see this young riders, also my students, with this crazy fire in the eyes. You know, you see Flatland the first time and you know you want to learn this stuff. Sometimes I have some students, they are really good, take like 16 lessons and they can hack wheelie for 2 meters. Like, make circle, I tell them, bro, you are 12 now. You're going all in, full gas for 4 or 5 years, and then maybe you can be a bro rider. and you have some sponsors, and if you're really, really lucky, Flatland is going to the Olympics, and one day it can be your job, because the scene is not that big, and your future is bright when you have this scene,
and you are a young European rider.
But it's hard to find them, it's hard to get them. I still have the energy to motivate the kids. I still believe into that. But it's hard. It's really hard sometimes.
It's a common theme. Every time I do a podcast and I ask some of the same question, and that's one of the question that comes back, obviously. What do we do about the future of Flatland? And some people are saying that some people are trying, you know, people have schools, they're trying to motivate people. Some people do shows, and that's kind of a way to entertain people and maybe get one or two or three kids to get to start. But I think society has changed. Kids are into video games and BMX it looks flashy, but you know, they have other areas of interest. Also, I think compared to when I started, it's a little harder to get into Flatland.
Yes.
The tricks are more complex. You know, you see, they might be impressed when they see they attend a show or they see a competition, but between seeing and saying, "Oh, I'm going to do the same," there's a lot of work that needs to happen, right? Even a simple trick like a snake spin or a time machine is like, whoa. And then if you give a kid a bike, it's like, oh, where do I start with that? Thankfully, there is how-tos on YouTube, on internet. There's like schools, but it's still a lot of work for them. Typically, I think I see that because I have kids myself. You know, their attention span is short. And for Flatland, you need to be focused. You were talking about that when we talked about Japan, and you said, you know, Japanese have some discipline. I think it's more in the culture, perhaps. And it takes a special kind of person to have the discipline and to practice day in and day out. And you know, I know, and a lot of the riders know, like, you know, there are days where you're frustrated because you practice and you don't pull the trick. You can't, or you know, you've done it many, many times, and now today you can't do it anymore. And then you have to redo your combos. It's a very lonely existence, even though it's fun to do it with friends. It's a challenge to get people into it, for sure.
Yes. What I saw in all these years with my BMX workshops and students, the most of them, especially the talented ones, they had some longer experience on the BMX bike. When they realize how hard that is and how much you have to work, then they stop.
Yeah.
They stop. That's all the time the same story. And I don't know. I think, it's also a discipline and culture thing. But I don't want to be a kid at this time. When I grew up, I had sports like volleyball, football, tennis, swimming, and running. Okay, that was it. Today you can do everything. The first thing you see is this TikTok stuff and all these kids with this nice clothes and better stuff. And yeah, the society changed a lot. That's also a huge problem.
Mm.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Do you think there is a good chance that Flatland will be in the Olympics?
Oh, yes. I hope one day it's true that Flatland is going to the Olympics, maybe 2028. That would be my dream to compete there, to be one of these riders who's going to the Olympics. And then I would think about a stop riding competitions, only riding shows, and giving away all my experience of all these years to motivate the young generation to spend all my time into that, not into learning new tricks and practicing competition runs.
How long do you think you can keep riding at a high level?
My dream,
mm-hmm,
and my goal is 45. That's my line. I'm happy when it's possible to go there. I'll be doing a lot for this, like jogging, riding race bike, not sitting in the car all the time, doing something for the body, eat healthy. The problem is maybe smoking cigarettes, like 5-6 a day. And yeah, on the weekend, I'd like to drink a wine or whiskey. Yeah.
It's all right. That's no problem. That's okay.
Not that bad, I think so.
Yeah.
But I can feel it. When I was younger and I drank 2-3 wines and I stand up the next day in the morning, I felt nothing. Today, I feel that when I had like three glasses of wine on Friday night and I stand up in the morning, I feel that. That's funny.
Yeah, that's normal. I have that too. Going back to riding, so you're saying that by 45 you want to stop competing or you want to stop like trying to improve? Is that what I understood?
Yeah, my goal is to go to 45 and then let's see what's up with my body. And when the body feels still good, then yeah, go for it.
Look at Pete Brand. He's 53 or 54.
Yeah,
riding hard every day.
He's crazy. He's also still a good competition rider. It's unbelievable. He's one of these guys. He's not normal. He's living on another planet. Yeah, it also depends on your whole flatland life, on your of the way, how you eat, how you live your life, and also depends on your tricks. I think when you're doing all the time tail lifts, you can't do that until 53.
Yeah, your back is going to get killed. That's right.
And also your shoulder.
Yeah. So let's go on a positive note to 2024. What are your plans for 2024? I mean, it's end of February now, but you still have 10 months. So what are your goals this year?
I planned all this World Cup stuff, Fille de Montpellier, and then Shanghai in October, and Abu Dhabi, the World Championships. In the end of the year, in December, I also plan competition in the Netherlands this summer. Yeah, I have 14 shows at the moment, and we have end of February. That book looks also good, and I'm sure more to come. Some jams and having fun with my friends. The German Championship is also in August. I'm looking forward to 2024. I also have the Cycle Week, like every year. I'm looking forward to see all my BMX friends in Zurich.
Great. That's, lots of good plans for 2024. That's great to know. I kind of went around all the questions I had for you, so I just want to let you know if you want to thank who you want to thank and who you want to give a shout out to.
First, I want to thank you for this super cool interview. Super nice. Yeah, it's always nice to talk with you. And then I want to thank my girlfriend, my sister, for all the support and for understanding all this things with the flatland world and stuff. And also for the motivation, thanks a lot. Love you guys. And then I want to thank my sponsors. At least I want to thank BMX. Yeah, because I still love it. After so many years, it's super cool. Sometimes I sit at home on Friday with this glass of wine and I think about flatland. Why flatland is such a huge point in my life? Because I don't know what I wouldn't do without flatland. It makes me happy. Also the challenge to learn new tricks, to progress, to meet new friends, to meet new cultures and all this stuff. I will never miss that. So thank you for everything, BMX, and thank you, my BMX friends from all over the world. Much love from Switzerland.
And then everybody loves you back. That's great. Thanks, Dan. We had a good conversation, so I'm very pleased about that. Like, I like your philosophy of riding and approaching things, and it's great. It's always good to talk to you and see you. I wish we could meet more often, but I'm on the other side of the ocean, so it's a little hard.
Oh, yeah. Maybe you guys can plan this Vancouver flat competition. still want to come to Vancouver. Maybe this year or next year, Vancouver is also on the list.
I'll let you know, we have a big jam 26 to 29 July, and then the Ohio contest is the weekend after the 2nd or 3rd of August.
It's in Cleveland?
Yeah, Cleveland, that's right. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. All these guys told me that I planned like Vegas, but yeah, I'm not in shape. All these guys told me, yeah, come to Ohio, to the battleground.
Yeah, it was a great contest. And I heard that Lee Musselwhite actually is supposed to come this year.
Oh, nice.
From Europe, yeah. But, you know, like JF is going to be there, Dub's going to be there. Last year,
Benjamin was there.
Benjamin was there, that's right. Pete Brand, Terry was there. Omari, who else was there? There's a lot of guys, actually.
And the floor was sick and so huge.
Yeah, you speak. It's in a church. I mean, it's a community center, but it's part of the church. Yeah, it's huge. I want to say 12 meter by 15 meters. It was very, very big.
Oh, that's sick. Yeah. The biggest riding spot on a competition I've ever saw was in Amsterdam. Flat ground.
Yeah, flat ground.
2002?
Yeah.
2003? Yeah.
That's before we fucked it up and we started Red Bull Circle of Balance in small circles. You know, before that, we were doing like big competitions, like big spots, right? And after that, everybody started spinning in circles. And so we didn't need any more. And so people like Alexis de Zollner or Sebastian Grubinger, who go straight, they don't compete anymore because they can't. You know, it's
they can't. Yeah, that was too much. That's true.
But yeah, you know, there's a lot of events happening in North America this year.
That's super cool. The Flatland competition scene looks super, super good.
In October, I think it's in October, there is the annual Aloha Jam in Hawaii. Now, that's very far for you, but I was there last year in October, and it was a blast. The whole week of like riding and being on the beach, and it's super nice with Bobby Carter and all.
Bobby told me, Dan, come to Hawaii. I can check you a good hotel for good price. The most expensive thing to come here is the flight. The rest we check. That's super, super nice. That's also on my bucket list. One day I want to go to Hawaii. I had this plan to go in August this summer, but yeah, now my girlfriend starts to study. Yeah, we have to change the holidays.
Dan, thank you so much for this interview. It was really cool. Learned a lot, have a lot. Now I'm going to edit this, going to go. So again, thanks very much for your time, and I hope we'll be in touch soon, all right?
Oh yeah, we keep in touch. Thank you so much for everything, my friend.
You're welcome.
Hang Five Podcast.
Hang Five Podcast.